right, here we go again. And this is episode 223. And the format is simple. I'm going to say this again. I say it every week, but I still get emails in saying, I can't find your podcasts. Probably not in a Yorkshire accent like that, but they do. We do four shows a month. Members get full podcast plus download. Non-members get part one and a download as well if you go to sheepfound.co.uk. You can also get it on Podomatic. That ship it out to all the usual suspect platforms, Spotify, Amazon, Audible, Apple, and all the other ones. There's about seven other ones, actually. Deezer, I think one of them's called. I've never heard of it. Have you heard of Deezer, Chris?
No.
Never heard of it. It catches on Odyssey as well, although I don't upload much to Odyssey and Rumble anymore because they seem to take hours to upload. So, yeah, anyway. And YouTube, thing of the past, sadly. We're trying to do limited on YouTube because... Every time, I seem to get away with two or three videos, then the ban one that just puts me off them again. So other podcasters seem to get away with it. Like they seem to put hours on, like these big ones in America and that, and seem to say what they want about everything. And little old us with a few thousand subscribers get banned every time. We must be Steven Seagal marked for death. Yeah. Thanks to everybody for buying from Health Bunker vitamins. Remember to use the promo code. And you can even get... Go on, Chris. I'm giving you an inter...
Get what?
Your gaping gobs.
All right. Yeah.
Because you always bollock me saying I don't mention them.
No, I don't actually bollock about gaping gobs. I bollock about the merch shop.
Right.
That's what I'm on about.
Why?
Because my gaping gobs are weird. Not many people want them. Right. I understand.
You're weird. You're weird. Yeah, well, anyway, you haven't sold anything there. You just mentioned them, so it doesn't matter. Right. You join Chris on Instagram as well. He's got about 1,000 members, I think, now, haven't you?
About 2,000, actually.
2,000?
Nearly, yeah.
Didn't know you were that popular.
I'm not very good on it, but
must be a flamingo legs. Anyway, today we've got two guests, a returning guest. Well, it's probably part of a podcast by now, actually. Fellow Huddersfield lad. In fact, all four of us are from Yorkshire today. We're surrounded by Yorkshire lads. John Hamer's back with us. Hi, John.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
And his writing partner from their new book, 60 Degrees South. I hope I've got that title right. Is Andy Ross. Is it Andrew Ross or Andy Ross?
It's Andy Ross.
I didn't know if you wanted the full Sunday name.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
No. It's Tuesday.
It's weird, you know, because, I mean, you can hear the difference in dialects, even though you're not far away. Keithley Neck at Woods.
Yeah.
Not million miles away from us. And there is a definite difference in dialect, isn't there?
Oh, there is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah, you sound like Huddersfield Rugby League players that I used to know.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I don't know if you remember Henderson Gill.
Oh, I know him very well.
Do you? Yeah. You sound like Henderson Gill.
Right, okay. Yeah. I wish you were as fast as him.
Oh, yeah.
Should try living in North East Yorkshire. The accent here is just weird. My missus, it's just completely different. It is a Yorkshire accent, but it's a completely different one to the West Yorkshire accent, yeah.
Can you do it, John? Can you do an impression?
No, I can't. No.
It's that weird, is it?
Yeah, well, it's like a cross between Hull and Middlesbrough, but right. It's not surprising, really, because it's like equidistant between the two. So it is just...
Right. Yeah, yeah. Chris credit. He hasn't actually lost his accent, even though he's been down south most of his life.
I left when I was 20. Been gone 30-odd years.
Wow.
32 years, yeah. But there's even a difference... And a difference in accent between Huddersfield and Dewsbury. It's only 10 miles away.
Wow. Perhaps in Leeds. Perhaps in Leeds are different as well.
Yeah.
You can tell people from Leeds easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Really A couple of people down here have actually guessed my accent, which shocked me. Someone went, are you from Huddersfield?
Wow.
Because they got a friend or they went to uni or whatever. They recognise the Huddersfield accent. It's quite odd, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I know Dewsbury's a totally different world. We're actually from Dewsbury. Originally,
they say bugger instead of burger.
Yeah, and turkey instead of turkey,
and bud instead of bird.
Yeah,
bud.
It's like they emptied Barnsley out of all Waifs and Strays and put them in Dewsbury. We all ended up in Dewsbury.
Well, you had to go somewhere, didn't you?
Yeah. And it what even throws people even more is obviously me and Chris are of an ethnic variety as well. So you've got a broad Yorkshire accent. Our dad were pure Yorkshire, Dewsbury, whatever. Our mum were American black, yeah. And so we've got this broad, like Charlie Williams.
Charlie Williams.
Hey, all my old loves.
Yeah, yeah. My mum, I know we're digressing, but my mum used to hate going to watch Charlie Williams with my dad because he used to make sure she sat up front and it should be only black facing audience in working men's clubs. And Charlie Williams used to zone straight in on her.
Did he?
Not take it piss out of her, but talking
racist.
To her. Yeah. 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 Talking to her. Take it piss out of all whites. Brilliant.
I worked at a place.
I miss them days.
I worked at a place here, and one of the guys, he saw me and thought maybe I was Mediterranean or whatever. He knew I was a mixed race. And he went home and told his missus, when he heard me talking, who this guy worked with, he said, there's a guy at work. He looks like he's fucking dubbed.
Dubbed,
yeah. Like in a bad Chinese film.
Like a kung fu film.
Yeah. He said the voice that comes out of his mouth just does not make any sense whatsoever.
I remember one of my early jobs. What are we talking about? All this stuff. Anyway, I remember one of my early jobs working behind a bar next door, old golf house, Chris, and the woman that owned it said, "You shouldn't talk like that. You should talk like you're from Brazil," because I had hair then, obviously, and what have you. And
so your story were exactly the same as mine, but shitter.
Yeah, shitter. Yeah. Yeah. Yours were better. Yeah. Boy from Brazil.
Classic.
No, not. I'm from next door.
Yeah. Classic older brother takes my joke and tries to make it better and fails.
No, it won't. I won't take it trying to make it better, Chris. That's all in your mind. That's all in your tiny little mind. Tiny little red wine mind.
Do you remember, just as a little aside before we get into it, do you remember in the 80s, I think it was, there was a TV program called, it was a comedy like show thing called All Quiet on the Preston Front.
Rings a bell.
It does ring a bell, yeah.
Yeah. And it was set in Preston, strangely enough. And I just remember this one line from it, and it just cracked me up, and it stuck in my mind all these 40 years or so, whatever it was. And there's this really posh guy who went into this Chinese restaurant in Preston, and the dialogue went something like this. He said, and he kind of just went, to the waiter, and the waiter just shrugged his shoulders, and the guy said, "Oh, I'm sorry, is my Mandarin a little rusty?" And this guy said, "I don't friggin' know, mate, I'm from Ormskirk." Chinese waiter, you know.
Quality. How'd you fuck a big it up? Yeah.
Are we allowed to make jokes like that? I don't know if you're
sorry, so. It's racist, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
No, it's funny though, isn't it? Talking
I
about
think
that.
I reverse, it would take it piss out of a guy, wouldn't it?
Well, like, generally, it generally is, isn't it? It's generally taking the piss out of a stereotype, but you're not allowed to do that even anymore.
No.
But I always find it funny that you can go into an Italian restaurant and order some pasta, you know, can I have a spaghetti carbonara, and you can put an Italian accent on. You can't do it in a Chinese or an Indian restaurant, can you?
No, that's right, yeah.
I'm being serious, though, but isn't it funny that that's become... And everyone likes having their accent ripped off as well, by the way. But it's become racist, hasn't it, to do an African or Asian or... but. I don't want to sound like Bernard Manning, but they don't mind because you're just imitating someone's accent, aren't you?
Yeah, of course.
The only people it offends is middle class white women.
Morons.
For some reason.
Vegans.
Yeah.
Anyway,
where would I be without taking piss out of Chris's nostrils?
Mm, I mean, exactly.
Where would I be? What would I say? What would I have to think about all day? Coming up with shit jokes and taking piss out of my brother. Anyway, let's get down to serious business before we spend
hour and a half. Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, exactly, John. I quite like talking about stuff like that. So I'm going to read a bit off your website here that US Admiral Byrd said, which, because I think you've written about Byrd, haven't you, John?
Yeah.
All right? Yeah.
Yeah.
As well.
A little bit, not much.
Yeah, not much. Yeah. I think we all know who Admiral Byrd is. And it says on your website here, the 60 Degrees South website. But strangely enough, there is left in the world today an area as big as the United States that's never been seen by human beings. And that's beyond the pole, on the other side of the South Pole. US Admiral Richard E. Byrd, 1954.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, he probably would have added more to that, I reckon, because he did see things, didn't he? And he did go across there.
Well, there was a lot of stuff, but unfortunately, I'm not sure whether it's actually been made up, some of it, because it's supposed to have been from his diary, but his diary was published allegedly by his son after his death. And it was in his diary where he stated this stuff about going to this strange place beyond the pole, and the plane controls were taken over by some strange race of beings, and they actually landed the plane in this green and pleasant land way, way, way the other side of the pole. And apparently it was taken out, you know, it was invited to get out the plane, and he went and he met with these beings that weren't, you know, were like us, but not like us. So that's all in his diary. But whether his diary is a forgery, that's up for discussion. We don't really know. So yeah, it's a strange one.
But that extract that Dom read there, though, John, that was from the TV interview.
That was a real say. You know, he did actually say that. Yeah, he did.
That was going to be my first question to you guys: is that the bit about the UFOs basically taking him down? Was that true or not? I didn't know where that came from.
Well, it's in his diary. It's in his diary, but we don't know whether his diary is genuine or not. That's the thing. Right.
Be nice if it was, wouldn't it?
That'd be great.
But he said, this whole story is quite a Googleable conspiracy, really, isn't it? Because it all actually happened. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and you've got the treaty, so there is it is kind of a good thing to throw at people, isn't it?
Yeah. What's also beyond question is the fact that he was debriefed by James Forrestal, who was the then U.S. Secretary of Defense, and it didn't really end well for Forrestal, did it, John?
It certainly didn't. Well, it didn't end that well for Mr. Bird either.
Not really, no, but even worse for Forrestal.
Yeah. And this all is all in the book, all of this bit. I mean, obviously it's fiction because we don't really know what happened, but it's all in the book. You know, James Forrestal was actually, well, we know he was murdered. Okay.
What is that story, John? I don't know that story.
Yeah, James Forrestal, after he was very much anti-establishment. Even though he was U.S. Secretary of Defense after the Second World War, it was very. It was a friend of Joe McCarthy, for example. It was a friend of Byrd. You know, very controversial figures in the upper echelons of government, etc. And when he, I can't remember what it was. I think it was the fact that there was a trigger that made him arrest him, and I think it was the fact that he was campaigning, even though he was part of the establishment, for a non-segregated armed forces. Okay, because in those days, the American armed forces were very much black and white and never the twain shall meet. And he was campaigning for them to actually all come together. And then shortly after that, he was arrested. He was certified as insane. They took him to Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland. And he ended up being pushed, absolutely no question about it. It was pushed out of a 16-story window, and then they said it was suicide. Yeah,
and he was a really good friend, wasn't he, of Byrd?
Yeah.
And Byrd had sort of told him everything that had happened in his expedition there in 46 and 47.
Yeah.
And one thing that Forrestal had sort of agreed to us, or rather, said he would definitely do, was to tell some of the secrets to the American public and just basically stop obfuscating all the time and show them some of the truths that Byrd had discovered. And it was shortly after that, as John said, that he was committed to the mental institution.
Yeah, he was suicided, obviously. You know, yeah, it was absolutely was. There's no question about it. And, this is obviously the fate that befalls anybody who goes against the establishment, isn't it? And he was going against it in a big way. So we weave that into the story a little bit. And then some of Forrestal's descendants as well come into the story. And, you know, I'll give you an outline of the story. It's basically about two RAF guys who were seconded to the UN Interceptor Force. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, or Andy can, whatever. And they're based at a place called King George Island, which is 62 degrees south.
What year is this set in, John?
Present day, just a year or so ago. Right. Yeah. And there's flashbacks as well. But and they start to question what is going on. Why on earth are they being asked to shoot down any incursives that go beyond the 60th parallel. I mean, this is where it gets the title from, 60 degrees south. You're actually not, according to the Antarctic Treaty, allowed to travel beyond the 60th degree south. So they're part of the interceptor force, and they keep intercepting planes. Most of them go back when they're actually threatened. But they have conversations with these people saying, you know, why are you doing this? What's going on? And they come up with all, it's full of truth bombs, basically. They say, well, you know, we don't know what's going on beyond the Antarctic ice wall. Nobody does. They're not telling us the truth. And eventually, one of the guys especially starts to question things, because he was just a normie, just like the rest of humanity, or most of the rest of humanity. But he starts to question things. And that's where all the truth bombs come in. We, as authors in the narrative, we bombard them with truth bombs, and they ask each other questions, and it, you know, about everything, not just about the Antarctic Treaty and what lies beyond the 60th parallel. And it kind of develops from there. You know, they actually escape eventually, both of them. I won't, you know, give too much away, but they both escape across the ice wall into a place, the one that we were just talking about, that Admiral Byrd described. And you know, that's the basics of the story. There's much, much, much more to it than that, but that is the basics. Have you got anything to add to that, Andy?
Well, yeah, I mean the fact about the 60th parallel. As John said, you know, you're not allowed to venture beyond that unless you're in a highly organised official trip, either military, government, or on one of these Antarctic cruise ships. But they rarely go, most of the public rarely go below 62 degrees south, which is the Antarctic Peninsula, the South Shetland Islands, which is actually where the airbase is, where our two guys are stationed. And if, you know, basically, if you refuse to turn around, you will be shot out of the sky, or you'll be blown out of the water. And that's how I got the idea for the book, really. I just thought, well, you know, what would happen if a guy, just a normal RAF pilot, got stationed down there and was just asked to blow it, innocent travellers, joy riders, people just questioning the truth, just sightseers out of the sky. What would he think? And then, as John said, he gets into conversation with various people on the flights, and they ask him questions about Admiral Byrd, about the Antarctic Treaty, about various things. And he goes on a voyage of discovery, goes down rabbit holes, and as John said, he ends up venturing further south himself to see what's there.
Yeah, but we've all sorts of other stuff into that. We weave James Forrestal into it. What you call Amelia Earhart, who was a big friend of Admiral Byrd.
Yeah.
You know, Amelia Earhart, the American flyer who disappeared.
Yeah.
And she's woven into the story, as is Scott of the Antarctic.
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to have died through this story, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, well, absolutely. Well, yeah. Did they, though?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Well, whatever they did, crossed over into Never Neverland.
And it's not just flying over the 60th parallel that's not allowed. No. Boats as well.
Yep.
You know, in fact, the very first chapter is about this boat that sets off from New Zealand under the guise of being a fishing expedition. And, you know, they are actually setting, it's called the Antarctic Truth, the boat, so that gives you a bit of a clue. And they set out to try and do that, go beyond the 60th parallel, but they get intercepted by a UN gunboat. And, the rest is history. And that's how the story begins.
Is there any record of people actually getting shot and down the hall? I know that I've heard the threat and everything, but is it... Is it actually a record? Yeah.
It just happened. We don't know how often, because obviously it doesn't get reported. Andy had Andy sent me a text today, because you've been doing a bit of homework, haven't you, about that?
I have, yeah. Yeah.
Go on then, tell the story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was trying to find some examples of that, because it's a really good question. It's a question that people ask. All I've seen previously is things like YouTube videos of people in Cessnas or people in fishing boats just being intercepted and then turning round. But back in 1979, tourist flights, sightseeing flights to Antarctica were very common. Air New Zealand were running them from, I think, from Auckland, or Wellington, I think. to Mount Erebus. And in 1979, there was a Mount Erebus New Zealand disaster. And even if you look into that on Wikipedia and kind of just mainstream sources, that whole flight is shrouded with mystery. There were all kinds of shenanigans in the inquiries afterwards. Air New Zealand were accused of covering up the truth. But the reality of it was that this airliner came to grief on the flanks of Mount Erebus, and then they've never, ever repeated those flights.
Yeah, because we're trying to make out with UFOs, I believe. Is
that, oh, that was part of it as well.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, part of it as well. Yeah, I mean, one of the very interesting things that I found out only today, actually, about that, was that there was a lot of photography, video and still photography being taken by the passengers from within the cabin. And there is a photograph, and they reckon it was taken at the split second the aircraft was destroyed. And it's got oil all over the window. Yeah, but at that point in time, it looks like to me that the plane is still in level flight and it's still in the air.
Right.
Now, possibly could it have been shot down? I don't know.
I'd heard that it was. I mean, I was aware of the incident. I've not looked into it in the depth that you did, but I've read reports years ago, not recently, but years ago, that, yeah, that flight was actually shot down because it was getting too near the truth.
Yeah.
So, and I'm it's happened before, but it's never reported, really.
Yeah, they were taking, I think, 10,000 people a year were going on those flights.
Maybe they had to nip it in the bud because cameras got more advanced.
Possibly. Mate, could.
Quite possibly, yeah. Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it the only place on Earth? I suppose there is a few, isn't there? Like CERN, whatever CERN is, the International Space Station, Tesla Station. But Antarctica, these are the places, though, that are treated, even Switzerland, you could say, because they haven't even got a standing army, but nobody ever invades them. Of these places where it's like a written rule that we're all in on this. And I think you mention it, Chris, sometimes, that there are certain rules that nobody can do. Yeah. Everything else is a free-for-all, but nobody can...
Space, Antarctica, and now COVID.
And probably the sea as well, the depths of the sea.
Yeah.
But even the Arctic, you know, I mean, although it's not as strict as Antarctic, but, you know, you're not allowed to overfly the Arctic either. I mean, there is no Arctic treaty, well, not that I'm aware of, but you're not allowed to overfly the Arctic either.
No.
And again, speaking about the Arctic, this is a really good contrast, if you like, to what goes on in the Southern Hemisphere, if it is a hemisphere. You know, these guys in the story, they're based 62 degrees south on King George Island, which is 500 miles south of Tierra del Fuego, off the tip of South America. Now, the weather there at 62 degrees south is ridiculously cold. It very, very rarely gets above freezing. And the place where they are, I mean, we know that, I mean, this is a real place, by the way. It's not a place we've made up. It's just icebound and it's just a barren landscape. There's no flora, there's no fauna apart from penguins.
Penguins.
Penguins, that's all there is there. And in the book, part of the dialogue between the two guys is one of them says to the other when he's starting to like question things a bit, he says, "Have you ever been to the Faroe Islands?" The guy says, "No, why?" He said, well, I've been a couple of times. He said, and it's really warm in summer. And yet that's the same latitude as we are here, only north. So what's going on there? Why would that be? If we've got two equal hemispheres, allegedly, why would the north be totally different to the south? You'd think it'd be, you know, because we're supposed to be on a flat plane with the sun. The orbit is kind of a flat plane, isn't it? Or it might be slightly tilted, but, you know, what's that all about? Why is it so cold in the Southern Hemisphere and yet at a similar latitude north, it's temperate?
Even where three out of the four of us are, we're about like 53, 54 degrees north.
Yeah.
You know, and it's lovely and warm in summer. It's only kind of...
It's in cool. Shandiswilshire.
Well, yeah, I know he does. But
not,
Even though he's almost, drink.
He's almost in the tropics, isn't he? He is,
He's in Amazon rainforest.
Yeah. But, I mean, 53, 54 degrees south, that's the equivalent, 53, 54 degrees north is the equivalent of Tierra del Fuego.
Yeah.
And you've got the Tierra del Fuego in the southern hemisphere. It's absolutely chuffing freezing. Yeah. You know, there's barely a tree. There's ice on all the hills. You know, it's almost uninhabitable.
It's like Brighouse.
It is like Brighouse. Uninhabitable.
Oh, that's a bit of an exaggeration. Nowhere to be as bad as Brighouse.
Don't we used to live in Brighouse?
I used to live in Brighouse, yeah.
Apologies to anybody in Brighouse that's listening to this. It's only a joke, honestly.
Well, those are the,
I had to pick somewhere.
But that's the kind of dialogue that's in the book, isn't it, John? You know, they've just got to start asking questions. Yeah. A bit like we might if we're all just sat either here, you know, like where we are now, or if we're sat in the pub or something, you know, you just start talking.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But like I said earlier, it is one of the best conspiracies, if you like, to get people who think you're nuts. Because you can Google the fact that there is an Antarctic treaty, and as soon as you can't discuss or go somewhere, there's a bit of an issue, isn't there? Especially when every country signed it and everyone's involved.
Yeah.
You have to be suspicious immediately, don't you? For sure.
And regardless of what shape you think the Earth is, the fact that there's a treaty and it stopped people going on it, right? And like you've just said, the latitude and the difference in temperatures and things like that don't make sense. No. You've got to question what the actual true story is, regardless of what anybody thinks. You know, before you even get into the shape of the Earth and what have you.
I mean, another thing we talk about in the book is the actual ice wall itself.
Yeah.
And the extent of the ice wall and historical problems that people have had, adventurers, explorers have had, in actually mapping it and particularly circumnavigating it.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, Captain Cook tried, gave up after, 3 years, John, or something? Three and a half years he gave up.
James Clark Ross. Yeah.
You know, he tried it and said it was impossible. He couldn't find a gap in it. He couldn't find any ingress into it, but neither could he find an end to it.
And also their compass bearing, you know, this is verifiable stuff.
Yeah.
Their compass readings were throwing them all over the place. Yeah. It was just completely, it didn't correspond to a globe, basically, you know.
Yeah.
And they were trying to follow the compass as though it was a globe. And in fact, Amelia Earhart, when she did her voyages, because she did several before the one that she disappeared on, she was using, was it Gleason's map she was using?
Gleason's map, yeah. Gleason's world map, yeah.
And she said that was the only one that gave her any accuracy whatsoever in a flight path.
So those guys on the boats who were trying to navigate...
She must have been nuts, though, John, to think that, bloody hell.
Yeah, of course she was. She was barking.
Did they just have the ice wall on, like, for instance, the left-hand side, and it just never ended? Is that what you're saying?
If it is, you know the flat Earth map with the ice wall that goes all around the edge like that. If you follow that round, it's something like 72,000 miles or something. Well, can you imagine doing that in a sailing ship?
Bloody hell!
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. I'd love to know what's over there. Really, it's one of my favourite.
The thing is,
you'll find out, Chris, in a few years, because Al Gore says Maldives will be underwater when it all melts. So we'll find out when a few penguins float up colder.
Talking of, I mean, on that subject, like the subject of ocean levels rising. Yeah, I mean, I had a fantastic discussion with a guy who came around my door a few weeks ago campaigning on behalf of Addingham Climate Action Group.
There is a sentence you can use, and it generally begins with F and O.
Yeah, well, but I got into a brilliant discussion with him, and I mentioned to him, because he started banging on about the Maldives and sea levels, and my son at that very moment in time was in French Polynesia.
Right.
Yeah, working on a cruise. Yeah. And he went to an island, which everybody laughs at the name of this island. It's called Fakarava. He's laughing. Yeah. Fakarava. Yeah. And it's basically just a strip of sand sticking out of the Pacific. And its highest point above sea level is 2.5 meters. Now, I went with Johnny on that same cruise in 2018. And I was chatting to a guy then who'd lived on the island 40 years. And I said, has the sea level risen in your lifetime? And he said, not by 1 millimetre. Not by one solitary.
He's obviously lying, though, isn't he? I mean,
well, of course he is. I know he is. I know. So, because we both accused him of lying, you know, like you.
Yeah, like you do.
So when Johnny were there last year, I said, tell me what situation is at Fakarava when you get there. That's 5 years later. No change. Yeah. Absolutely.
Funny that, isn't it?
Absolutely no change.
Yeah. Well, go.
And this guy, when I told him this, he said, well, we might be talking about only a 0.02 millimetre rise over the next 5 years. Over the next 50 years.
So you're moaning at what you're moaning about then, you know,
Fuck me, I'll get some longer wellies.
Yeah. And then he almost told me to FO and he walked off. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't like to hear...
He stormed off. He actually stormed off in the end. Yeah. He stormed off, yeah.
The stupid thing is that they push this bloody narrative onto us about, if the Earth's predicted to get 3 degrees warmer by 2050, fucking great.
Good for round here, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Brilliant round here.
What is the problem? Yeah. You know, 300 years ago, we were in a little ice age. Yeah. You know, and life was hard, you know, especially in those days, you know, when there were no modern conveniences. But, you know, if the temperature went up 3 degrees now, it would have virtually zero effect on the sea levels, if any at all. Mm. And also, it would make life much more tolerable. You know, everybody would, you know, live outdoors and blah, 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 all the rest of it, you know, depending on whereabouts you lived from the equator. But, you know, it's just madness. People just lap it up because they say, oh, the sea's going to, you know, the temperature's going to go up 3 degrees. Shock horror. And everybody goes, oh, no, without even thinking about what the implications that are. And the implications are that life would be a lot more comfortable.
Especially in England. I mean, all we do is moan about weather. Can you imagine that? We have an indoor culture, don't we? If we got a bit warmer, we'd have more of an outdoor culture like the rest of Europe.
God forbid, Chris, we went out and enjoyed ourselves.
Well, I know you can't do that. Bloody hell, what do you think you are?
It's like some people just... I mean, I know we get accused of this, but it's just like some people just want... They want the doom, don't they?
They love it.
Yeah. I refuse to go there. Whenever I do my talks, whenever I do podcasts, apart from this one, I always emphasise on the positive stuff. I never, ever go the doom route because that's so many people do, you know, and I'm naming no names, but there's so many podcasters that are just like...
It's good to point out the lies and the deception. On top of it, it's you don't have to be the end of the world, does it?
No, but
again, it's how you take it, innit? I think all four of us here sound like fortunate that it's like, as we say around here, water off a duck's back.
Penguin's
back, so to speak. But because we don't let it take hold of what we do, you've got to get in with your life as well.
Of course you do.
Which is the difficult part. Some people, obviously the download is that intense that they find it difficult to... My missus don't get involved because she... I know what her mentality would be like. She would be down the rabbit hole into dark places she probably wouldn't want to handle.
The thing is, it's all fascinating and interesting, but we're all puppet wonder.
Do you know one of the things, Chris? I was thinking this the other day. It's funny you mentioned that when I do that genealogy thing and you go back like 300, 400, 500, 100 years, 200 years, you realise how insignificant every fucker is.
Yeah, life is very transient, isn't it?
Yeah, within 5 minutes or 2 minutes, I could go back 500 years looking at people. And
how many generations have gone by then?
20 generations. Irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. But interesting. So, Andy, how did... When did you start the process of thinking, I'm going to write a book about this subject?
Right, well, about 18... Yeah, probably best about 2 years ago, actually. Right. Maybe a bit less. I was in the pub with a mate of mine who's completely on our page on most things. Yeah, met him in 2021 at the Stand in the Park.
Right.
Where I met a lot of new friends, actually. Yeah. And I'd just been watching some of those YouTube videos about these people being turned around. And I'd also watched a series on, I think it was on YouTube at the time, but I think it's just on BitChute now, called The Lost Histories by a guy called Iwaranon.
Yeah, I saw them,
And that had really kind of, taken the top off my head, actually, to be honest. I found it absolutely just mind-blowing and started looking into all kinds of stuff. But this thing about seeing these people being turned around by one by a gunboat, second one by an aircraft was, I just thought, I could write a story here about these two guys that get posted down there. They just, you know, innocently go ahead with it, you know, go along with it. Just say, yeah, fancy a year down in Antarctica, why not? Just go down and then things happen. And my friend Lauren said, I think that's a brilliant idea. Let's map it out now. So we sat in the pub for about 2 hours and just jotted down like the first four chapters. Yeah. And we thought this could go all over the place. This could. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but then what, 4 months later, when I'd got a little bit further with it, but I had no idea how to turn it into a novel at all. And by this time, I'd come across John on various podcasts, including your own, read a couple of his books, realising he were a guy from Yorkshire. I thought, yeah, he might do.
He'll be all right.
He'll be all right.
If anybody's going to be happy working with me, this guy
might.
At least he'll know
what I'm saying.
Yeah, he will understand me. So I just contacted him through his website and sent him a little note, say, you know, give the synopsis of the book on it. And I think within half a day, John came back and said, I really like this idea. Let's do it. So that's how it all came about.
Brilliant. Yeah.
He's not slow at coming forward, ain't John?
No, well, I am. I'm not
a Yorkshireman.
And I'm not either, so I'm not either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I was just going to say, the idea, it just rang a bell with me, and I just thought, wow, yeah, that's great. Because I'll tell you why I'd always said for a long time, I did write a novel, but that was another story, and that was there were different reasons for that, which I won't get into now. But I did write the novel called Titanic's Last Secret. But I always said after that, no way am I ever going to write another one of them, because it's totally different to writing factual stuff. Totally different. You've got to set a scene. You've got to build a tension. You've got to characterize people. You've got to, you know, paint a picture of them, and, you know, a picture in words. I mean, not a physical picture. And I always said, I'm not doing that again. But then, about 3 years ago now, maybe 2 years ago, another friend of mine, Paul in Blackburn. Hi, Paul, if you're listening, mate. He said to me, you know, you should write more novels. And I thought, oh, no, it's not my thing at all. And he said, well, he says, the only reason I say that is because, think about this. He said, there are lots of people who you present this as fact, they won't be interested because they're normies. They don't think that way. Their brains are wired differently to us. He said, but if you present it as a novel, it might just get them thinking and doing a bit more research. And I kind of mulled that over for a bit, and I thought, yeah, that's probably true. And then time went on and went on, and I never got around to doing anything. Then Andy really was the impetus for me to do something. But I think that is a great, way of looking at things, and that is that novels, people don't take it seriously, but nevertheless, it might just create a chink of light in the brains and encourage them to do some research, especially if you present what the people, you know, what the characters in your novel are talking about in a realistic way, which hopefully we do.
I mean, in a way, we're utilising what the controllers are doing to everybody else, or attempting to do, to propagandise, if you like.
Absolutely.
All you're doing is using their tricks.
I'm going to say, if you could turn it,
I'm on about everybody, even with our.
I know what you mean.
If you could turn it into a 6-part BBC miniseries, it'd be fucking history, wouldn't it? And it'd be solid and nailed on.
Call it Adolescence. Have you seen that new 6-part series or something that's out at the moment called Adolescence?
No,
I've seen it. I've seen it advertised, but I don't know what the hell it's about.
Well, the queer Starling has talked about it in Parliament, and he was actually. He called it a documentary. Yeah.
Right.
It's a 6-part. And he's actually said today that it should be shown in schools for free.
Well, that rings alarm bells in my head. Actually advocating something, but I don't know enough about the background to the story.
It's about a young boy, a teenager, killing a young girl who's a teenager, who's either fobbed him off, his advances off, or something's happened. I haven't watched it, but that's
Is it based on a true story, this?
No.
No.
So, so it's just a bit of light entertainment then, really.
Well, yeah. But they've also brought in all this misogynistic stuff and saying that kids are being turned by, say, Andrew Tate and people like this into being, which, I mean, how many of them sort of, or if there are people, kids that do that for that reason, how many of those killings there are, they have never mentioned. I think there are.
Well, I think it's going towards online radicalisation, isn't it? I think that's what they're pushing it at.
Yeah.
To be frank, I mean, if Keir Starmer recommends something or advocates it, then that is an immediate turn off for me. You know?
Yes.
I was going to say
the same. Yeah. Yeah. Any of them people in Parliament.
Yeah. But the power of these TV shows, what I was trying to get at is, it's like The Crown. I remember hearing on the radio, and it said they should put a warning at the beginning of it. This was on like the news people saying they should put a warning because people think it's a fact and they need to realise that it's fiction. But even I overheard someone say, you know, it's just like, it's good to watch The Crown because it's showing you real history. But that's how they get people, because they don't think that it could possibly be made up, do they?
No, that's right. Yeah. Exactly that. Yeah, and that is the same principle that we're using in writing this novel. It's exactly the same principle. We're writing it as though it is really happening, obviously, because that's what novels are, really. Yeah. But it's just another mechanism to actually kind of drive a little wedge into people's brains and make them start to think. People who normally would just reject it out of hand if you presented it as fact.
Yeah. But even on your brief synopsis, that would make a good film, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Why has that film never been made? Yeah. Why has that never been made? An adventure into unforbidden
Funny
territory.
Funny you should mention that. About, how long ago is it, Andy? About eight months ago. I was contacted by a guy who said he'd heard, I think it might have been even this podcast, actually, your podcast, saying me talking about my next book.
Checks in post.
Our next book. Yeah. Or our next book. No, don't worry about it. There's no check. And he said,
won't worry.
Right,
it will hope, John. It will hope.
Yeah. Desperation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, you know, I know he is a TV producer because I've you know, done the background work on him, but I know that he is real. He is who he says he is. But he said that he wanted to try and get some funds together and create a drama, a TV drama out of it. And, you know, he said, when you finish the book, send me a copy and I'll read it. And if I like it, and if my financier, whoever that is, likes it, then we'll go ahead with it. And, you know, it could be very lucrative. So, yeah, until maybe a few weeks ago, we were still in that optimistic mode that was going to happen. But at the very end of it all, he let us down, basically. Or he was let down, or so he said, by his finance guy who did a runner with the money.
What concerns me there is that somebody who's a film producer listens to me and Chris.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
I'd be worried.
I don't mind him listening to you.
Your concerns may have some foundation, but I mean, he is awake. I mean, I know he's awake because I've had lots of conversations with him. Yeah. He talks about stuff, and you know, it's not that I don't think he was spying on you.
No, I don't think he was. I'm joking there.
Brother. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was going to say,
I'm joking there.
I was going to say, how many conversations did you have with him, John? Was he awake to everything?
I'd spoken to him before the previous year anyway, because he wanted to do a series about the Titanic, you know, my version, it's not my version of the Titanic, the alternative version of the Titanic. So I'd spoken to him at length on several occasions. He even came up to Scarborough and took me and the missus out for lunch.
All right, so you were
at a posh restaurant.
You were down the road.
In Scarborough.
Getting it done.
Well, I know it's a bit hard to believe. Posh restaurant in
Fish and chips. Come on, John. It was fish and chips.
Yeah. Well, fish and chips out of paper.
With some candy floss. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got quite down the path, though. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, like I say, he said that the financier had done a bunk owing him loads of money, and very sorry, but the deal was off, and that was it. End of story, you know.
I mean, if you're looking for finances to fund stuff like whatever you guys or anybody in our world talks about, it's going to be difficult to get to that point, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
The fact
the
financer's got to have a financer, got to have people who are going to work within that. The money will have so many people. Like, a financer might be a front for 20, 30 people putting money into a project, if you like.
Well, especially when you're going to make a film about something that no one talks about. I
think it's saving grace was that it was a story. I mean, they make stories about all sorts of stuff, don't they? You know what I mean? So that was kind of what made it credible to me.
Yeah.
The fact that it was a story.
I'm sure the producer was credible. I'm sure he was credible. I'm sure he wants to get them stories out there.
Probably.
And also the story is about several people who have disappeared trying to get there. I mean, knocked off.
Even that the Antarctic treaty, you've never heard that mentioned on the TV, have you? I've never heard it mentioned on the TV.
No. By the way, can I just say this? If you're listening, Jason, I know you do listen to this podcast. I'm not having a go at you, mate. Honestly,
sounds
like a good guy, man. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good guy. Yeah.
Sounds like somebody who's trying to get that message out there. But in their world, in NPC world, and they're trying to get into NPC's heads, trying to get funding for projects like that. It must be difficult, man.
Well, you imagine if that were on TV, like you were saying about truth bombs. If it was on TV and someone went, there's an Antarctic treaty. You know what I mean? You're already there, aren't you? You've already opened someone's head up to a fact. Yeah. They'll Google it instantly and realise it's real.
Chris, it can't be real because the Americans hate the Russians and the Russians hate the British and blah, blah, blah.
But they're all happy in Antarctica or the ISS space station for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They disagree on just about everything under the sun. Well, apart from the Antarctic treaty.
And COVID.
Yeah.
According to the propaganda on TV, it should be like Moonraker up in that ISS space station by now, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Firing lasers at each other.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. You can make a story about anything. It doesn't have to even be closely based on fact, does it? You know, I mean, look at bloody Star Wars, for example, you know.
Yeah.
Was that in real?
Nope, sorry.
Oh, bollocks.
Sorry.
No.
It's about as real as ISS.
But just picking up on what you said, Chris, about, you know, making a film or writing a book about subjects that so many people don't want to talk about. I mean, we've had quite a lot of reviews, haven't we, John, from the people who've read it so far. And people, by and large, have absolutely loved the story. You know, they said it's a real page-turner, can't put the book down. I mean, you got one the other day, didn't you, John, from a lady who said she'd stayed up all night reading it because she couldn't put it down.
Absolutely.
A mate of mine, a bit of a normie mate of mine, came round for a coffee with me this morning, and he'd finished it actually in the bath this morning. Didn't ask him for any more information than that.
No, thank God for that.
he said he'd finished my novel in the bath only this morning, and I said, what did you think about it? And he said, I absolutely loved it. He said, but I wished that when he went beyond the South Pole, he'd gone through some portal. And I wanted it to be fantasy. And I thought to myself, I know why you've said that. It's because you're really uncomfortable about the fact that it's possible that the Earth might extend way beyond.
A bigger Earth.
Yeah. Way beyond where the 90 degrees South Pole. Mm. And I just said, look, Steve, I said, giving his name away. I said, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah.
Hi,
Steve.
All right, Steve.
I said, portals are in so many books. There's so many books with portals. I said, I really wanted a portal-free book.
I suppose in his mindset, he wanted it to be more fantastical, so it was more unbelievable, I suppose.
Yeah, he did.
They could legitimise how unbelievable it was.
He could have invested more in the fantasy than the reality, But what we wanted to do, or I wanted to do, and John agreed with me, and we kept this going, was we wanted everything that happened in the book to be physically possible according to what we know now.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So you can fly, you can sail, you can walk, you can go through tunnels, but there's no magical wardrobe. You know, there's no knife that somebody can cut a hole through and walk through. There's none of that. Yeah, it's all physically possible, and that's what we wanted to maintain, wasn't it, John?
Yeah. I mean, there is one or two things that are kind of a little bit off the wall, like things like the med beds. We don't know where the med beds exist, but they're in the novel. But you know what I mean by med beds, don't you, guys? Oh,
no.
Do you?
Go on.
We've not heard of med beds. All right. Apparently, you know, there are rumors and strong rumors that the technology exists to cure everything. You know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bones, from broken bones to cancer, basically everything, any ailment of any, you know, any bodily ailment whatsoever, be it disease or physical. They're called med beds, and apparently it's a bit like, you know, in Star Trek, Dr. McCoy, and he, you know, he waves his little wand over people, and you know, it's like an up to date version of that.
In Prometheus as well.
I know what you mean now, John. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. You can actually sit in these things, and they just examine your body automatically, and then they start to heal it. And that's, there's a med bed in it, not giving too much away. So yeah, not everything is absolutely positively known to be in existence. But
even that, John, wouldn't be, it's not sort of too out there, is it, to think that?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
I think it's perfectly plausible. May not actually be true at the moment, but it's definitely plausible.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, we kind of explained, don't we, John? Because you know, there's a healing with one of these beds, and the guy says, well, how do they work, and what, you know, what kind of techniques do they use? And because obviously we've no idea about what these med beds that you see on films are all about. So what I did was I based it on my knowledge of bioresonance healing.
Yeah, I'm going to say there'd be Rife frequencies probably.
Yeah.
Like that thing behind me.
Is that a Rife machine?
It's a red light bed.
Oh, red light bed, right? Yeah. Well, my mate Martin was terminally ill with cancer 16 months ago. Started on Rife technology.
Yeah, I've got some Rife equipment upstairs.
And,
yeah,
yeah. He's back on bioresonance healing. Mm-hmm. And he's going back to
amazing
work.
Stuff.
He's,
amazing
he's just,
stuff.
He's just going back to work. So what I did was I put into the book the background knowledge I had about bioresonance.
Yes.
As far as how that pertained to the medbed.
Yeah,
good
I've
idea.
Got several bioresonance machines. Yeah.
Have you really? Yeah.
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 Yeah. Really. Anyway. But so it's not that far out because you're talking a frequency. Devices,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Which actually exist.
Yeah, they
know?
Do. Yeah.
And so God knows where the technology is if you go to DARPA and things like this.
And the medbed, what you're describing, is in a lot of science fiction. It's, like I said, there's one in Prometheus, if I remember.
Yeah, you're right.
They've got the Bacta tanks in Star Trek, haven't they? Star Wars, and the ones in Star Trek that you were talking about. As we know, the truth's often in fiction.
Far as those demolition men things where they kept them in them cryogenic type things.
Yeah, the cryogenic thing.
Were it 12 monkeys as well? Were they in that type of
That was time travel. Yeah, there was something like that, I think. Yeah, it's not fantastical at all, is it?
Not in our mad minds.
Not if you're a fucking lunatic like us. Anyone who's listening.
You see all your audience now going, what the bloody hell are you on about?
They're with us. They're with us, John.
They're fucking madder than us.
It was either that that upset Steve, or the fact that you know, I might have introduced a concept of a cooperative society without... without government.
Yeah.
Which I think almost kind of flipped his lid, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that were, is it, that's a good sign, isn't it, that someone like, say, your mate, who reads it, who's not obviously more of a normie than we are, if you like, actually enjoyed it.
But
it also flipped him a little bit, because he wanted the ending that he's been programmed to want, if you like.
Yeah.
But I also, obviously, it'll resonate with people like us as well, because if you ever read a novel now, which I don't read novels now, because all they are just extensions of what you see on TV.
Yeah.
So why would I want to buy a novel to tell me a load of shit now?
Propaganda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I struggle. I can't even read bloody novels, let alone if I read a novel. It's normally a historical one, even though when you're reading it, you realise all the history is bollocks as well.
Yeah.
Is it? Honest.
Yeah, but we had, so some of the stuff you think, oh, but they're even using it in here, you know? Or the writing in there that there are more like gay people in there or lesbians and stuff like this. And I'm thinking, that wouldn't have been there then. That's never been written in any history book until recently. Yeah.
No. Well, let me tell John and Andrew about this. This is one of my bugbears at the moment. So there's a series of video. I still play video games occasionally. And there's a series of video games called Assassin's Creed, right?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
They're quite historically, a lot of it's historic. They're very interesting because it gives you pieces of history. I'm not saying it's all accurate. No. We just brought a new one out, right, which I've been waiting for because they're all in different time periods. And this one's in ancient Japan. So in the samurai culture, which I love all the samurai stuff, guess who the main protagonist in a game about so you can play as two protagonists, I believe. I haven't played it. Guess who the main protagonist would be? As an honest guess, who would you think it would be?
Adolf Hitler?
No, it'd be a Japanese man, wouldn't it?
Specifically to the samurai.
I'm trying to be
a Japanese samurai warrior then.
Be a man, be a Japanese man. Yeah. No, you can be a woman. Or a gay black man, samurai.
But not a man.
Japanese man.
You could be a black man who's also a samurai, which didn't exist, and is also a gay. Or you can be a woman. So you can't even play as a Japanese samurai male.
My God. Yeah. Well, what about, this guy we're talking about who read my book. The guy read my book and he was chatting to this morning. He'd, last year or year before, he went to see that Anne Boleyn film.
Yeah. All right. And, was it a black woman playing Anne Boleyn?
Well, there was that's right. And they were chatting. And they were
that's
also,
true, though, Chris.
And they were also, in King Henry's court, there were black advisors.
Well, there would have been, though.
Yeah, well, yeah.
There would have been.
Right, of course there would, And so they were chatting about it when they were having a curry afterwards. And they said, oh, what a great film. And Steve said, well, it was. But,
It's just not real, is it?
And he had a bit of a kick-off about it. And this woman marched over from the other table and just started effing and jeffing at him, calling him a racist.
Oh, yeah, that's...
From the other table.
I'm part spook. That ain't racism. No. All right? That ain't racism. No. I'm sorry, but that's just...
No, it's just historical fact, isn't it?
It is.
How can historical fact be racist? It's just modern.
It's just nonsense.
Mindless.
It's like having... Again, there's been like Disney films remade with black actresses playing that normally would be white actresses. It's just nonsense. It was written for a white actress. It's a white actress. Yeah. That's it.
Exactly.
You know, Snow White's dark now.
White is dark, yeah.
Oh, she's called now Cold Black.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cold Black. Is she from Barnsley?
They don't say coal, they say coil.
Coil.
I was listening to a podcast today about giants, as you do, whilst you're sure. But they were saying...
Just passing time, Chris. it used to be John Craven's news round. Now it's giants.
But like John Graham Hancock's been called a racist because he's saying maybe there was a race before the Incas or before the... No, you can't say that because that's having a go at those indigenous people. But he's just fucking talking. He's just coming up with theories.
Yeah.
And he's not a racist, is he? So even that world, the world of archaeology, you're a racist if you question that the Egyptians built the pyramids because that's against the Egyptian. I mean, it's insane, isn't it?
Oh, well, we're going to be in trouble, aren't we, John? We're going to be in bother.
Right.
We've got two flight engineers who were Chilean, allegedly Chilean. Yeah.
Yeah, but they turned out to...
They're both 6 foot 4 inch tall.
With red hair.
Not red hair.
And one of the main characters, the lad from Yorkshire, says, starts calling him a couple of lanky nerds because he says, they can't be Chileans because they're too tall. Oh, dear. Oh, no.
And another guy, we're
in bother now.
Going to get cancelled, Andrew.
I know. Yeah.
And another guy calls one of them a steaming pile of Dago llama shit.
which would happen in army, wouldn't it? Let's face it.
I mean, it would in real life, wouldn't it?
I don't know. This lily white nonsense that everything's got to be addressed in a certain way that nobody understands either. This, clown world is clown world, isn't
it?
You're dealing with clown world.
It is clown world.
I told my missus when we first met. When we first met, I said I was quarter caste, and she went, you can't say that. I said, I can say what I want.
What did you say? It's better than our don't calling me a wog.
Well, and then
you racist bastard.
Yeah. Just words, though, innit?
Our mum used to go mad, didn't she, with us? She called herself. Oh, are you? Yeah.
Did she?
Bless her. Yeah, she did.
It was best when my mate were around and she was Moppet Fauna started singing Camp Town Races. that went down like a lead balloon. Not from my mum. Yeah. My mum thought it was funny. From my mate, it was like, what are you doing?
Well, I've got a mate who lives in Leeds and he's Indian. He's Indian. And he's as Yorkshire as they come.
Yeah.
But he works as a physio. And in 2020, he refused to have the old jibby-jabby.
Yeah.
And he got basically cancelled from his NHS contract. Mm. And in the first little meeting that he had, when they called him in before he got actually suspended, they actually accused him. They actually said to him, because you're Indian, you're Asian, you've probably been radicalised by somebody. That's what they actually said to him.
If I were him, I would have played the race card and said, you're a racist.
He did. Yeah. That's exactly what he did.
They'd have gone,
good for him.
Oh, sorry. No, it's fine. Yeah. Off you go. Go back to work.
Surely they've got it wrong way, because it were Muslims who were getting radicalised, well, not Indians.
They're all same fire.
All right, yeah.
That's what he said
we're
to
all
him.
Same.
He's probably a Hindu. Yeah.
He said that. He said, you're just saying that to me because you think we're all the same.
He was probably
that's
Hindu.
What he said. Yeah.
Well, whoever that chap is, right?
Yeah.
Well done, you. You stood up for your rights, man.
He did, and he won his tribunal in the end as well. Yeah, he did. But he went through 2 years of hell. 2 years of absolute hell.
Imagine the stress of it as well.
He's a bloody hero. He's
a hero. These are the people. Yeah. These are the people who they were there. They stood up for.
If I were him, I'd have gone into the tribunal in a wheelchair and a dress. Sorry, what's that?
The blonde wig. Yeah. What a time! What a time! 2020. 5 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
5 years ago.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, we just passed the anniversary, haven't we? A couple of weeks ago.
How long did it take you guys to rumble it, or did you rumble it from the start?
1 minute.
I was saying it before it started, to be honest with you, because not my background, but I'm into the health side of stuff. We've got a clinic and a natural health clinic and stuff like that. So I would have been saying for a long time they're going to utilize health as the next control.
Yeah.
So when it started, I didn't realize how big it was going to be. I'm not saying I saw into the future at all.
No.
But I realized when they started locking everybody down, it were all about a jab mandate that it were going to be. And nothing was happening. The way they were selling it, they were going to be bodies on the streets.
Yeah.
Everyone knew we were going to be dead.
Do you remember them videos from China where there were all these people falling down in the street and dying? Bollocks. I was laughing. I was thinking, what? I mean, are people actually believing this shit? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I wasn't laughing a few weeks later when it all, when the roof fell in, but...
Those pictures, John, were taken by... The French journalist that took those pictures, or it published in a, it was part of the Bollier family. And I know I'm Yorkshire and stand to speak French, but and their World Economic Forum, Bilderberg, all the usual things of a certain religion, etc. I've done quite a bit of research on them, actually.
They weren't related to the Nordea brothers, were they? The ones that took the pictures of the second flight flying into the tower?
No, but I think they all worked for that one company.
Probably.
I think they own... I have to get my notes out. I'm not going to say it until I get my notes, but... So they own a fact... They're one of the fact... what they call them? Fact-finding companies in France as well. The massive conglomerate. They're a weapons business as well.
Wow.
Because them Nordea brothers that made that film, it's a group of French filmmakers and they were making a film about daily life in New York.
Yeah.
That was the only film they've ever made. Ever. There were none before it and none after it.
What was that, sorry, John? Was that of the second hit of the...
Yeah, where they're looking up through the skyscrapers and you just see the plane appear. In the gap and hit the building, and then the explosion of flame.
And also, where's
it's
the film?
CGI,
then?
By
where's
the way.
The film then? They had the opportunity to make the film of a lifetime, and all they've got is a supposed CGI fucking plane going into a building.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Where's the rest of the film?
Yeah.
Why weren't they running around with a camera if they had the cameras there?
Yeah.
Where are you, Nordea brothers?
Yeah.
But going back to those Chinese films of people collapsing as well. I mean, they were breaking the falls with their hands, weren't they?
Mm.
You know, completely different to the photographs you saw of people
last minute.
Yeah. Collapsing, you know, post rollout, you know, they were hitting the ground like a sack of spuds, weren't they?
Yeah.
You
sack of shit. Yeah,
absolutely, they were. Yeah. You know, and these people going down, oh, I've just managed to come round enough to put my hands down to break me fall. You know, I realised that at the time. I thought they look fake. These photos,
yeah,
well, just look fake.
Yeah. Well, they quite obviously were not what we were told. Or they've been, whatever, gassed or something.
Yeah.
But they weren't what we were told. Anyway, it didn't happen over here, did it?
No, it didn't.
Didn't happen in Europe. Nothing were happening
anywhere
like
else.
Didn't
happen from that.
Nothing were happening like that. People were rushed into hospital on a false test, that put into intensive care, and then killed.
Yeah.
It was as simple as that. Yeah. And people, going back to what we're saying, a normie or an NPC could not get in the head that their own government. Do that to their own population.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we were all past that years ago, listening to this and us four, that your own government is willing to do you in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, the first person I knew, well, in fact, the only
you.
Who was done, I mean, I actually know a few people who were done in.
Yeah.
But the first person I was out with this guy on Thursday night, was his sister, in April 2020, she was taken into hospital with really bad arthritis. They shipped her out to a care home within about 2 days. This is in April.
How old was she, Andy?
She was 63 at the time.
Right, so not ridiculously old.
No. Yeah. His younger sister.
Yeah.
And then she rang him from the ward. He wasn't allowed to go and visit her because they said that the whole place were full of COVID.
Bastards.
So she rang him on the phone and said, they're putting me on... palliative end of life pathway.
You know.
And she called this guy who was coming in and administering it. She called him Dr. Death. She says, Dr. Death's coming again, Jamie. You've got to get over here. And he was ringing up, can I come in? No, you can't. Unfortunately, unlike me, I'd have just gone and kicked the bloody door in.
Yeah,
but,
me and all.
Me too.
But he didn't. And then the next thing he knew, it was like 36 hours later. The phone calls from his sister had stopped, and he got a phone call from the care home, said she's in her final hours.
I mean, that's the type of stuff you hear about.
Okay,
you know, the stories, say, in Germany, where they're putting disabled kids into a hospital, or Acton, wherever it was, and the family's just got a letter home saying your kids had died of measles or something like that.
Yeah.
But how the, you know, when you actually think about it, who was that guy who was administering that to a girl, a woman in the 60s?
There's a team of them, Chris. There's a team of them. There's nurses, the doctors.
Yeah. No, they were all in on it.
Yeah,
how,
all of them.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe it just takes one...
How do you justify that to yourself to do that?
I can't get my head around how they made that happen. Really.
Because, well, the fear and...
arthritis, though.
Orders and fear. Yeah, but she hasn't got arthritis. She's got COVID, and COVID's going to kill everybody.
Yeah,
and I'm in an hazmat suit, and this is how they terrorised everybody. And she's on an intensive care ward, which means that she needs palliative care.
Yeah,
fucking hell.
And he said goodbye to her wearing a hazmat suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
My own younger brother, he was regarded as being particularly vulnerable. He was 64 at the time, and I mean, poor lad, he was in a bad way because he was an alcoholic and he was drug dependent, but he wasn't a death's door, nothing like. I mean, he was fit and well, but he had one of those buzzers, you know, that you'd wear around your neck and you press the button if you're in trouble. And he pressed the button, and this was like end of January 2021, when the vaccine wasn't freely available at that point, but it was to vulnerable people because they put them in the queue first. He pressed the button, said, you know, they said, what's wrong? He said, I can't breathe. I think it was a drug overdose. Next thing I know, he snuffed it, hadn't he? You know, but I'm absolutely certain that, you know, they took him into hospital and they did away with him in hospital. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
Once they get him on that, someone close to our family, one of my wife's side, her mother's just passed away. And my wife's dad was saying, what happens when they go into hospice? I said, she won't last a week. He said, how do you know that? I said, because you just crank up the treatment and that's it, they're gone. Because they've only got they've only got that bed available for a certain time when you go in there.
Yeah. Well, as you guys know, Karen, my wife's mother, died last month. Well, not last month now, February it was.
Yeah.
And she went into York Hospital and she had... I can't remember what it was, pneumonia or something like that, but only very mild. And within 2 days, they said, right, we've put her on end of life. You know, she was 69. So again, not massively old.
No.
They put her on this end of life pathway.
Well, again,
you can't dispute it. You can't say, well, I don't want her to be.
No.
They just make the mind. Took over. That's it. You've got no say in it. Yeah.
And it happens that quick, it's gone. And also, they don't tell you what they're doing. The palliative care to somebody won't mean that we're going to kill you.
No.
Exactly. And by the way, not only did they stop feeding her, they stopped giving her water as
well. Yes. Well, they generally die of dehydration, not lack of food.
Debbie Evans said that, didn't she? She said that's what when she was on here.
But the sad thing is, that lady there with pneumonia, for instance... if they'd have given her drips of vitamin C, for argument's sake, 25, 30 grams drips of vitamin C, her pneumonia would have probably disappeared.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was only a mild case anyway. I mean, she was sitting up in bed, you know.
Well, she might not have even needed a drip. She might have just needed some, so, Lipsomal or some powdered vitamin C.
It's like the Liverpool pathway, isn't it, thing that they say that they've abandoned now. But I don't think they have. They might have abandoned it, but they've replaced it with something equally.
That was the blueprint. That was the blueprint, wasn't it?
Yeah, they just switched to another protocol now, aren't they? That's all they've done.
Death by fucking box ticking, isn't it?
It is death by clown world. It is death by box ticking. Because once they get you on that path, and I say to people, be careful when you open that door and you go in to that doctor's surgery and tell them what's going on, where they take you. Because they will lead you down a labyrinth, and before you know it, you come out, or you don't come out, because they'll send you to a specialist here, a specialist there, terrify you, another specialist there, terrifies you, even just going terrifies you, and like I say, before you know it, you're in their hands.
Yeah.
I don't think any of you guys know this, but 6 years ago, I contracted sepsis through an abscess in my mouth, in my gum. Went to the dentist. She made a right hash of taking the tooth out. She did everything to pull it out by putting a foot on my face. It was that bad. And she twisted and twisted and twisted, and it crumbled, and it burst my gum open with all the infected blood in it.
Yeah.
I swallowed it. Two days later, I was at death's door. And I tell you how bad it was. The doctor actually came around to see me at home. And the first thing he did was start ringing the hospital, you know, the ambulance, sorry. And I said, what are you doing? He said, you know, I could talk. He said, I'm ringing the hospital. Ringing the ambulance. You're going to hospital? I said, no, I'm not. Because even then, 6 years ago, this was before all the COVID bollocks, I knew what hospitals were, you know. So I said, I'm not going into hospital. And I know that that saved my life. I know that it saved my life because I know what would happen to me. Mm. I said, if I'm going to die, I said, I want to die here in my own bed. I said, I'm not going into hospital. He said, well, I think you're being foolish. I said, well, I don't care what you think, really. This is what I want. So it took me a year to recover from it, but here I am.
Wow. Wow.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't walk for 6 months. It was that bad.
You were weak as well. Yeah. Wow. But it took some
All I ate for 3 months was fruit.
Yeah. Should have had a med bed, John. You needed a med bed, John.
I couldn't keep anything down but fruit. It was weird. And I don't know whether that was psychological or
what. It's obviously what you needed, John, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I lost 3 stone in no time. Yeah. Bit of a drastic diet, though. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody listening.
No, I wouldn't recommend it either.
No.
But, I mean, the thing is, you know, we've all given these examples of, you know, people in our own families or people we know. And this must, surely, this isn't just like... amongst people of our mindset,
no, surely
everybody else must have experienced.
But I think it's just absolute denial, to be fair, Andy, because my missus's boss, he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and he was dead in 9 months. But he knew my opinion. I knew him. He was a lovely guy. But even when he was in his deathbed, he had the cover job.
No, are you joking?
And he told people not to come round. And the flu, you were telling me, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him in the summer. He was dead before Christmas.
He had about two boosters and three taps.
Well, it doesn't matter how many he had. He were having them right up to the end.
Wow.
I know. Again, like I said, lovely guy. Two kids.
Most of these people are nice people, Chris.
He asked my missus what my opinion was, so he knew my opinion, but he never spoke to me about it. But
salt of earth people. There are people, aren't there? Yeah. Really? Yeah. You know, all right. They're not necessarily the same mindset or anything like that. And would they adopt? A lot of them would adopt us into the British Gestapo. But we're not that kind, are we?
No, my missus got dobbed in by one of our neighbours.
Right. For what?
In July. I think I think it was whenever VE Day is. Is that in May? VE Day.
May 8th.
Yeah. So it was May 20th, and it was VE Day. And
May 8th. Contrary
to all the regulations, she had the temerity to take our grandchildren to the river that's about 50 yards from our house, River Wharf. Yeah, the river was low because we didn't get any rain, did we? So there was a lovely beach. It was just good for paddling, a little bit for swimming. Took the two grandkids down. She was sat on the beach and a police van turned up about an hour later and told her she had to go back to her house.
And so she should. Weren't there like green steam coming off her from all that COVID that she were releasing?
Well, yes, she was really bad, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
She was coughing and spluttering like nobody's business.
And then kids, even though they've got no symptoms, they're carriers.
Yeah, and she's
got to be careful.
She said to them, I thought we were allowed to go out and exercise. And the police said, swimming isn't exercise. She said,
Plan world. You have a red nose and a pink hair.
Honest. I mean, just stuff like that. So one of our, and they said one of the neighbours had reported us.
Right. What they should have done is gone ahead with all this protocol, and anyone who grassed anyone up should just go to prison. Then we'd have a nicer existence now, wouldn't we?
God, we don't
know. I don't know about you guys, but during COVID, with all the lockdowns and restrictions, I just went about my business just exactly as
me too.
I never obeyed any of the rules at all. No. I drove wherever I want, whenever I want.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. My daughter lives in Sale, and I obviously pick her up from Sale. I did it at that time when she was young. And I went every week. I never missed a week.
No.
There's only one Saturday. One thing I didn't do, and that was go down to my mother-in-law's for Christmas because I was so scared.
Yeah.
I'm being quiet now. We had to miss Christmas at my mother-in-law's. It's a fucking nightmare. No, I'm joking.
I hope she's not listening.
I'm keeping my voice down in case we missed this. To be fair, it was the one thing I didn't want to do because I had my nipper in the car. And I thought, and people did, my missus had mates who got pulled up by the cops. I didn't want to get pulled over with my nipper in the car. That's the only thing I didn't do. Everything else, I didn't stop me from doing anything.
We did it. We did absolutely.
When you used to walk,
I think certainly after about May, I think because at first we just thought, sit in the garden and not work for a bit and just mess about and play in the field and all of this sort of stuff. Go for a walk,
flatten the curve.
But then once it started just getting a little bit, it started getting a little bit beyond a joke. We just went, nah, to hell with this. We're not even going to restrict our lives at all. Mm. And it was bloody tough though. Bloody tough.
Well, when you walk into a shop with no mask on, you've got to explain yourself and stuff.
Yeah,
especially even shops you've been in most of your life, farm shop and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're having a go at you. Obviously, I was right calm with my response.
It was funny, the power of the lanyard. I had one of those lanyards, and I went into the post office when they first said it was, and this woman went, why are you wearing a mask? And I went, I can't. And she went, oh, I'm really sorry. I thought, you fucking spineless bent. You can't even got the kahunas to question a piece of plastic I've got hanging around my neck.
I mean, I think the thing I found the toughest was that the other family members just didn't want your presence at all. Didn't want you to go.
I haven't wanted this presence for years, though.
Okay, so I didn't need that to
change there. Yeah.
But like, you know, like me dad and my stepmom, you know, yeah. I kept saying, look, you know, this is nonsense. Just let us in.
Yeah.
But no. Frightened to death. I mean, I went round. I did actually go down one time, and we had to sit either side of a green fence round the little kind of sheltered accommodation where they lived, and we talked across a fence. I mean, just absolutely balmy. And but we could see from like it'd been a few months since we'd seen them. You could see how their health had deteriorated.
Yeah,
because. Mm. And that was pre rollout. That was still in 2020. But yeah. They'd had isolation, no exercise, no sunshine. Yeah. You know,
psychologically, it's absolutely screwed people, hasn't it? Yeah, psychologically.
Yeah.
I mean, it screwed people like us because we knew it were bullshit. So
yeah.
You know, I'm sure we've suffered some kind of PTSD from it.
Oh, definitely. Us,
you know,
definitely.
But imagine, I saw a woman yesterday. Actually, Matt Bajerski were over on Sunday, and I went to meet him for a cup of tea. A mate of mine who does podcasts. And he's from Huddersfield and all, quite a lot of us from Yorkshire. And a woman walked into the foyer where he was staying. He was staying at DeSandro's in Huddersfield.
You
know the hotel next to it?
Yeah.
And a woman walked in with a mask on, looking like this, around corners, you know. You know, you talk 5 years on.
5 years
on. All got a mask on.
Well,
I went to America in... September 2020 for 5 weeks. I was in America for 5 weeks and, you know, when COVID was on.
Yeah.
And the only reason I could travel there was because you were allowed, because this was pre-jab, you're allowed to travel to America as long as you'd not been in Europe for 2 weeks beforehand. So I flew to the Dominican Republic. I spent 2 weeks writing in a shack in the rainforest in the Dominican Republic and then flew from there into America.
Right.
And it was such a surreal experience. But when I came back, I went to meet Shannon, you know, who lives on the West Coast, and my co-author, for those people who don't know. And when I came back, I had to come back this ridiculous route via Seattle, Vancouver, blah, blah, blah.
Is that to cut down CO2?
Probably. Yeah, well, there were no flights. There were no flights. You had to go a really torturous route. And I got back to Heathrow. And on the plane, though, this is funny. On the plane, though, that it was a 420-seater plane. There were 17 people on it.
Wow. Wow.
And, yeah.
Clown World Airways.
Absolutely. And I got on the plane, and I'd booked a window seat. You know, when they ask you, if you've got a preference where you sit, I said, I'll have a window seat. So they gave me seat 50A. And I thought, great, that's a window seat. Walked all the way down the aisle, got to seat 50A, and it was just a blank wall. There was no window there at that seat. So I said, look, I've booked a window seat. I don't like, you know, not being able to look out the window. Can I move? Because, you know, there wasn't a person within 50 feet of me. I mean, it was just ridiculous. I said, no, you can't move. I said, well, why not? I mean, when I move round one seat, I know it's against regulations. It's against COVID regulations. You can't move from your allocated seat. And I had this bloody discussion with him. And anyway, she went, like me, so I just waited till she'd gone further down the plane. Then I called another woman and I said, look, I'd explain the situation. She said, go on, then, just be all right. Anyway, sorry, I'm digressing a lot.
No, it's a good story.
But I got to Heathrow, got off the plane, and I got on the train back up to Yorkshire. And this lady was sat opposite me on the carriage. Everybody had masks on. I didn't. Just thought, fuck them, I'm not putting a mask on. And
what used to go through my mind as well. Fuck them.
Yeah. And she said to me, she said,
fuck them.
She kind of waved in my face like that to catch my attention. She said, could you put your mask on, please? I said, I haven't got a mask. Why not? I said, not that it's any of your business, like, but I actually have a bad chest complaint, which I do. It's called sarcoidosis, and I have trouble breathing. I said, and putting a mask on might kill me. So she says, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You must be terrified.
Funnily enough, I'm not
terrified of my disease, terrified of the fact that I'm not able to wear a mask.
Yeah. Terrified of people like you fucking psycho.
No, I've just flown from England to Dominican Republic, been in America for 6 weeks, and I've flown back via Clown Airways, And now I'm talking to you, you mad bitch.
Yeah. But they were everywhere, weren't they? They were everywhere. You couldn't avoid them. You couldn't avoid them.
The staff on the Air Canada flight back, because I had to come back through Vancouver for some bloody silly.
Air Trudeau.
Although we know the flights.
Air Trudeau.
The staff, I went down the air bridge onto the plane, and every single, it looked like a brain surgeon's convention. There's like these blue plastic overcoat things on. They had a mob cap, you know, those plastic mob caps that surgeons wear, and they had face visors and a mask.
God.
And when we were, they served food of a sort, you can call it food, it wasn't fit to feed to your dog, but you had to put your mask up after every mouthful. You weren't allowed to just eat. Yeah. After every mouthful, you had to pull your mask up. And
obviously,
We do mention
the old 2020 situation in the book a couple of times as well, don't we, John? Just to stir things up a little bit. So
I think that
may have been something else that me mate might have been felt a bit uncomfortable about as well.
I suppose it's a good way to vent a little bit as well, isn't it?
I loved it.
And why shouldn't you? You know, you've got an audience out there that want to listen to it and slip it again using that. What they do, they'll inject that black gear guy into samurai world, right?
Yeah.
And people have got to accept it. So when they're reading a story and they like it, you know, just slip the 2020 nonsense in.
Yeah, we're doing that. Yeah.
I'm just waiting for a review on Amazon that says, "Yes, I quite enjoyed the book, but there wasn't enough diversity in it."
I think you have to wait about. I mean, I think is it 205 pages before a woman appears,
and then
that's disgusting. I think about 15 pages, we get an Indian guy in there, don't we? An Indian guy appears.
Yeah.
And then right at the end, there's two black African American pilots.
You've got the Chilean
black African Americans.
Well. Oh, no, we've got the. Well, yeah, but are they Chilean, though? Are they Chilean?
All right, maybe
not. No, they're not Chilean. Well, it turns out they're not Chilean, but we won't.
Yeah, well,
there.
I mean, they can't be Chilean if they're 6'3", 6'4", can they?
I didn't think that, and I've been listening to a giant podcast today. I was thinking that when you said it.
So, we're coming up to an hour and a half, believe it or not.
Wow,
talking our nonsense.
So
let's tell people where they can buy the book.
Well, of course, Amazon as usual, but we would prefer it if you didn't, but if you have to and you're not in this country, then it's your only option, unfortunately. But we have set up a website called 60 degrees south, which is 60-degrees-south.com, and if you can actually, there's a link through to my website, fortificationofhistory.co.uk, where you can buy all my books, plus this one, of course, including this one, of course. So, yeah, we'd obviously much prefer you to do that if you want to buy the book and have a bit of entertainment for a few hours, he said, hopefully. And, you know, that's really the only way other than Amazon, I'm afraid. But,
I'll put all the links in the description.
Yeah.
But also, we're doing a live event in Huddersfield on July the 5th, aren't we?
Andy's coming along.
I was going to say Andy's coming along as well. Yeah. So people go in there, we'll better meet Andy as well. And there might be a few questions fired about the book there. We'll try and...
Let's hope so.
Copies will be there. We'll take it as well.
I was going to say, are you going to bring some, John?
Oh, definitely.
I'll bring a load.
Bring them two or three. No, bring a box. All right, we won't run out.
That should be a good day.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah. And on the website, there's a three chapter preview.
So you can have a little
read through, and if you think it's a load of bollocks, you don't have to go any further. But
only a Yorkshireman could say that.
All right, okay. But
in that it is. If it's a load of bollocks, just move on.
Yeah, but if you don't think it's a load of bollocks, then like John says, click on buy book, avoid Amazon, and you'll get a signed copy if you buy it through the site as well, don't you, John?
There's a special price for listeners of the Sheep Farm podcast, £150, so you'll be all right.
And that's bollocks as well. All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you're tuning in to part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
But.
Silly Yorkshire bastards.